I'm Tracy Ellis, and this is The Elephant in the Dome, the official podcast of the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. Washington is losing farms and food-producing land. Does anyone care? That's the headline of a recent Seattle Times op-ed. The Washington Policy Center's Pam Lewison writes, between 2017 and 2022, our state lost 3,717 farms and ranches. 3,717 farms and ranches lost between 2017 and 2022. Senator Ron Mazzal, who's a farmer himself and the ranking Republican on the Senate Ag Committee, joins me now. What's happening here? And like the headline asks, does anyone care?
Well, they certainly should care, Tracy, because Washington now ranks number four in the nation for food cost. And this is a progression that has been going on for at least 5 years, maybe 10, and in reality, 40 years. When I was in college 40 years ago, there were 430 dairies in Whatcom County. It looks as though this year they'll drop to under 70. As we look down the road, just as Pam had pointed out in her editorial, we're losing farms at an alarming rate, and we're losing farmland in the United States at an astounding rate.
Why?
Well, there's a number of reasons why. And I mean, it really goes back to the 1949 Food Security Act, which started down the path of the federal government working to keep food prices. And this was in relationship to World War II, where we saw shortages and prices increase, and you know, people had coupons in order to be able to get fuel and food. The goal was to ensure that Americans always had food. So what we've seen is a depressed level in the United States because of the federal government. You know, everybody talks about the Farm Bill and all the money that goes into the Farm Bill, but 90-some percent of the Farm Bill is actually for low-income food programs. It's a very small percentage that ends up in the farmer's pocket. But the federal government has done a great job of keeping food prices low in the United States. We've had one of the lowest costs of food in the world. But the problem is that as these costs of production have gone up, these margins have shrunk to the point in time you can't produce 100 units. So now you got to produce 200 units. So what we see is smaller farmers going out of business, the remaining farmers getting larger, and you know, 98.5% of farms, whether they're corporations or not, are still owned by families. It's still very much a family business. It isn't like we've got large corporations. We got large corporations that are in the processing and the distribution, but not in the production. And over the last 4 or 5 years in Washington State, we've seen an incremental increase in costs to the producer. A lot of those caused by the state of Washington. And so they're in a squeeze. And I don't know as I've ever seen the planets aligned so completely as they are right now to make it difficult to make money in agriculture.
You mentioned the state and the impacts on farmers from state policies. And these are policies that come from the legislature. What are some of those policies and how have they impacted the ag community?
So let's go back to 2019. Now, that 2019 legislation that impacted egg producers in the state of Washington did not come, wasn't enforced until the 1st of January, but forcing all egg producers in the state of Washington to go to cage-free production for layers for egg production was costly. They had 5 years to make it happen. They made it happen, but on the 1st of January this year, you could not produce eggs as they had been done traditionally. You had to go to a cage-free facility. Well, that increases the production, increases the cost of production, which now they're passing on to the consumer. There were other issues, including avian influenza, but the truth of the matter is there was another piece of legislation that made food costs and the cost of production higher. Let's look at the Carbon Commitment Act. Carbon Commitment Act, we know, costs just shy of 50 cents a gallon for fuel. It wasn't supposed to impact the natural resource industry. So timber, fishing, agriculture weren't supposed to see that increased cost, but it did. And the Department of Ecology couldn't figure out how to make it happen. They blamed it on the fuel suppliers. Fuel suppliers blamed it on the Department of Ecology, but none of that mattered because now farmers, foresters, fishermen are paying an extra almost 50 cents a gallon for their cost of production. And for many of us, it is fuel intense. And in reality, it's more fuel intense for those organic producers who don't use any herbicides or insecticides. They require more fuel in order to turn the ground to make it organic. And then year before last, we saw this ag overtime law come into play where I guess it was three sessions ago. But anyhow, over the last 2 years, they continue to ratchet this down so that you've got to pay anybody who works over 40 hours a week overtime. This year, I think it's 46. Next year will be the full impact of it. Well, the reality of that is that we're seasonal. We, you know, whether we're putting up feed, whether we're harvesting grain, whether we're harvesting fruit, there's a short season to get that done. And we work a lot of hours in that time period. Well, our employees did too, and they benefited because they were able to get those hours then and they'd have less in the wintertime. Many of our seasonal workers relied on that in order to be able to earn a large amount of money and then be able to slow down the wintertime. Some of them would go back to Mexico and visit family for a month or two in the wintertime because they'd made the money in the summer. Now they're limited because none of us can afford to pay them overtime wages. And then you throw in some seasonal effects. Last year, we had cherry producers who just didn't harvest the fruit because the prices were depressed. And now in 2024, we're seeing an overall depression in prices on commodities, wheat, corn, beans. And so now we're seeing less value for the product produced and all of these costs on top of it. We got producers around me here who I'm not sure are going to survive 2024. And once they're gone, they're gone.
There may be people out there saying, well, hey, listen, people deserve overtime. Prices go up, inflation happens. Why don't you just raise the cost of your products? Why don't you just charge more?
So there's a rural-urban divide there. If you're raising a commodity, you don't know what you're going to get paid for that. You can do some forward contracting and the like, but largely those prices are determined well off of the farm. So you may have a standard cost of production, but varying on the year, you can get paid different for that product. And most of us are not vertically integrated. So farmers are by nature price takers, not price makers. So whether you're producing for a company that's just buying your product, whether you belong to a co-op where you're merging product from different producers together, the end result is that the wholesaler, the commodity buyer, they're the ones that determine the price they're going to pay for it. And in the end, the consumer has benefited from this program. Unfortunately, I've ever seen a time when the American consumer may be relying on out-of-country producers to provide that product. And a perfect example is asparagus. It used to be we had canneries for asparagus in Eastern Washington. It was a pretty consistent crop in the Yakima Valley, Walla Walla. There's none of that commercial production left. All of the asparagus, there's some fresh market, but the vast majority of the asparagus is coming from Mexico, Central America, other places where they have a lower cost of production because it largely is a hand-picked crop and they don't pay their workers. This is one of the misconceptions is that you think that you can raise the minimum wage, you can take care of overtime. All it does is push production to other places, whether it's out of state or out of the country, that then pays their workers far, far less than what we do, and we can't compete.
Talking with Senator Ron Mazzol on some of these issues, especially interestingly to me, ag overtime. Workers and producers are almost in lockstep during the legislative session, there were a number of egg workers who came to testify that this egg overtime law wasn't working for them. Why, and I'm just going to say, why do Democrats not listen to that and change course? If both the workers and the producers are saying this isn't working, who is benefiting from this egg overtime law at that point?
Well, we have a few select groups, and I'm suspect of one of them, that have been pushing this, who have been able to get the majority's ear and say that ag producers are taking advantage of these people and that there needs to be change. Unfortunately, this group has convinced them of that. And the group that they've convinced has not gone out in the country to talk to these producers. Some operations have multiple generations that have worked for them. And the process, they work a bunch of hours, 50, 60 hours during the seasonal portion of the year. But they use that to bring in the money so that they have time off. Now, they don't have that. They don't have that ability. So now, one, it's changed their lifestyle. In many cases, because of the fact that they're paid on a piecemeal, so they have to be guaranteed a minimum wage, but if they're picking fruit, for instance, they're getting paid based on the amount of fruit that they pick. There are certain people there, and I know some of these producers, that they're very good at their job, and so they're guaranteed a minimum wage, but oftentimes they're making $30, $40 an hour. Well, they're able to amass a cash sum during that seasonality, and they're willing to do it. Nobody's forcing them to do that. Well, now with this change, they're not capable of doing that any longer. And so what you end up, in order to keep from paying overtime, you try to hire more people. Well, we've got such a shortage of labor that that's problematic as well. But these people who are willing to work past 40 hours, and I mean, I can't tell you the last time I put in just 40 hours a week. Between this job and farming, it's considerably more than that. So if we're limiting their ability to make income, and we had the group that came to the Capitol and tried to get their point across, but I was there that day at the hearing 2 years ago when. And they were Hispanic, came in and spoke to the committee. And after they had testified, one of the senators said, well, thank you for coming in. You don't understand. Which really interpreted to me that majority senator did not understand what they were trying to tell them. They're dismissive. They believe that they're correcting the wrongs of the world. They've never been out to the field to talk to these people whom they're affecting. Unintended consequences are the greatest risk we run with any legislation, and that's what we've done here.
How important is agriculture to the state's economy? Some people in Seattle may say, hey, listen, we've got Microsoft and Amazon, and who needs ag?
Oh, well, it is incredibly important to the state of Washington. In a number of ways, in the sheer number of people that work in agriculture in the state of Washington, it's huge. When it comes to vibrant local economies, the farmers are the ones that are supporting your parts and your tire stores and your hardware stores in so many ways. But in the state of Washington, I mean, we've been blessed with deep water ports, so. We've got corn and beans coming out of the Midwest that are shipped offshore. Well, we're part of that agriculture, but we're a leading soft white wheat producer in the nation. We're a leading potato producer in the nation. We are a leading apple and cherry. Historically, we've been a top dairy producing state. We have a large beef industry, and a lot of this production is flowing through our deep water ports to out of country buyers. And that all generates income for the state of Washington. If we had to rely on Microsoft and Boeing in the state of Washington, we'd be in a world of hurt. So you can sit in your abode in Seattle and say, well, it doesn't impact me and I'm just going to go to the farmer's market. But in reality, it does, because it diversifies our economy. It creates a strong economy, because so much of what we do here in Washington State is directly related to agriculture.
What can be done to change course? Is there a way to get things back on track for the egg industry?
I believe that there is. One, we need to do a better job of telling our story. Two, for some reason or another, we've got a bunch of legislators that truthfully believe that, you know, they're isolated from the impact. You know, if you divide our economy into thirds, certainly the top third is not affected by the fuel price. They can go wherever they want to high-end grocery stores and can select their high-end products, whatever they are. I'm most concerned with the bottom third of our population, which is right now struggling. They're trying to figure out when they pull up to the gas pump if they can buy a gallon or 5 gallons of fuel, because it's in Seattle, it's costing them $5 a gallon, and whether or not they're going to have money at the end of the month to pay their rent or buy food for their kids. We're forcing a stratification in our economy like I've never seen before. And quite honestly, I don't think I've ever seen people care less about it. I see people arguing over, you know, oh yeah, we need to pay this for fuel. But that bottom third, by and large, they drive the least economical vehicles. They commute the furthest because they can't live where they're working. And they don't have the discretionary income to take this in. But that's just fuel. The cost of food in the state of Washington, in a bountiful state where we have a huge, I mean, we rank in the top five when it comes to diversity of crops in the state of Washington. We have a lot of available food. Why should we be the fourth highest in the nation for our grocery prices? Because of all of these policies that we've put into play, it's simple addition. As you add these costs up, and food makes about four stops between the farmer and the grocery store every time this cost has been added into there. So it just multiplies. Yes, we can. We can start having empathy for our bottom third of the population. We can start recognizing that we're having a detrimental influence on agriculture. And with these rising land prices, I mean, if I sat down with an economist right now, a real true business person, and I said to them, you know, what should I do? They would look at me as a farmer and they would say, sell everything you got, invest that money, split it up between a high risk, low risk investment. Your return is going to be far higher with that cash in investments than you're ever going to derive from owning this farmland, from owning the equipment, from owning the cattle, the hogs, the poultry. Sell it all, take the money, invest it. You've got passive income. You won't have to work another day in your life. But the reality is that I've got another generation, which is the fifth generation on this farm. And they've made a commitment to come back here and farm. And we've changed how we farm so that we are vertically integrated. I've made a commitment to them, and I'll tell you what, there's no greater thrill than for me to see my grandkids growing up on the farm like I did and experiencing and living out the life that I was able to and my kids were able to. So I'm not interested in selling out, but if we continue to see what we've seen over the last couple of years, I don't know if we're going to last another 5 years. Our cost of production, our availability of labor, have all increased at a rate that unless we make some significant changes, I don't know if there's going to be any farmers left. I mean, I've thought about creating a bumper sticker. The last farmer out of Washington, please close the barnyard gate. I can't list on two hands the number of producers I know that have either moved to Wisconsin, Tennessee, Idaho, out of the state of Washington. We've got a flight of farmers who are just looking to get out while they can. And it is incredibly sad.
That's Senator Ron Mizall, and this is The Elephant in the Dome, the official podcast of the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. I'm Tracy Ellis.